Hey guys, we're back and it is March 2016, and while most of the world is excited for college basketball, we here are excited for mechanical cameras. That's right, these are cameras that don't need a battery to work, but they might take a battery to drive something like a light meter, but it's not really necessary to have them. So we have some absolutely amazing cameras on the table today. Let's hit it.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Okay, guys. So, we all have them. We all love them. These are basically the bare bones cameras that drive a lot of ours. And actually, one of my very first experiences with SLRs were mechanical cameras. First with the Pentax K1000, which is a staple of most college and high school darkrooms. Mm-hmm. But also the Minolta SRT-102. Now, that's not the camera I'm going to have today. I ended up giving that one away. I really should see if she still has that, see if she still uses it.
I've got a Minolta SRT-102 that I have absolutely no reason to have. I mean, I've been wanting to get rid of this camera, but I want it to go to someone that's a student or wants to play around with it. By all means, anybody wants it, just shoot us a note. I'll
Classic Camera Revival. Okay.
Bananas.
Yes, exactly. Bananas. All right. So the camera I have on the table today, which I have elsewhere in the room, is the Nikon F2 Photomic. Now, it has I just love the name Photomic. It's like Panatomic X or the new 55 Atomic X. It just brings up this Fallout, like, alternate future where everything is nuclear powered sort of feel.
I just call it the photo mic. Simply put, it's like light coming into a microphone.
Well, that's exactly where it comes from. Is that this was the first Nikon F2, which was the pro camera through the 1970s that had a meter. And it's a Photomic meter, which is, I'm lucky I got a working one. Right, you don't really find the later metered heads for the F2 were much more reliable and still work. But I mean, when I got it from KEH, they said, "Oh, meter inoperative." I popped in a battery, and that worked.
Hey, beautiful.
And the meter's still dead accurate. And probably the one thing I love about the F2 is the fact that I could take it into the zombie or the nuclear apocalypse, use it as a personal defense weapon, right, against raiders or ghouls, feral ghouls. And still be able to take wonderful photos afterwards.
The really nice thing is if you got any of the glowing ones down the hall, you could use those to light up, and because you take some amazing abandoned shots. So, yeah. Hey, they'll be like walking light sticks.
Exactly. The one thing I don't like about it is it's difficult to unmount the lenses because it uses the claw to aperture index. Which is a throwback to the original Nikon F with their Photomic heads. You needed that claw so that the meter knew what aperture you were set on, and it likes to cling. It really, really does when trying to mount and unmount lenses, so it's not something that I can quickly swap on and off, but mostly because I'm probably not 100% familiar with the tricks. The camera just sings when I mount on the famous 105 f2.5.
Yeah, that's
lens. Just beautiful. Put that on it, put it on a carbine strap, and you're good to go. In fact, when we went to the Ann Arbor meet, that was the camera I used. I shot three rolls of film, and the only camera I had with me was my Nikon F, and it was terrible weather. It was raining and misty, and the thing just kept going. It's a real trooper of a camera.
It's a workhorse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, because it's a system camera, you know, you can basically get anything you want for it.
That's right.
And, you know, let's say if the meter head you have is broken.
I can just go on KEH, find another metered head that works, and just pop it on, and suddenly, bam, it becomes an F2A.
Yeah, like get one of the newer heads.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. with the LED.
Yep.
Because, those first heads, I forget which part, but there's a part that.
It uses a match needle.
Yeah,
system.
And I was thinking that there's a certain resistor or capacitor that's famous for going south in that head.
Exactly, which is why if you're looking at an F2, you want to get one of the later model heads or just get one with an unmetered prism. But those cost a lot more money than buying a metered prism.
It is interesting, like it's like for the F and the F2, that the plain prism heads are the ones that are the most collectible.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, am I correct in saying this, that Nikon, even some of the older Nikon mechanical cameras, they will fix it if you kind of bung it up?
Not so much anymore. Not the older ones. Simply because Nikon doesn't have the parts. They've sold it to another person. I'll have to look up the information about who still services the Nikon Fs and F2. Nikon should still service your F4s and F5s. They just recently stopped doing the F3. My F3 was one of the last ones that went through their repair shop. Actually, Nikon itself did a complete overhaul on my F3.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's like having a new Nikon again.
Yeah, and it's an F3, which is just one of the most perfect cameras to ever use.
Yeah, I've never been really much of an Nikon guy, but I've seen your F3 a few times, and honestly, the couple of times that I've just held it's got such a nice balance, a nice feel, and everything to it.
Absolutely. And sticking along the lines of Nikon, Donna has a camera which is familiar to the show. I discussed it in the Traveling Light episode last year in July from France. So I don't like to do some duplication, but this is a new person using it, so completely different perspective.
Today I have the FM2N. Now this camera is phenomenal. I really like it. It's got a good weight to it, and it feels very comfortable around the neck. It's extremely easy to use, and it looks beautiful. One thing I don't like about it, though, is it's got on the advanced part, if you don't keep it out and you go to take a picture, it locks. So there's a lock on it. If you don't remember to unlock that camera, you're not going to be able to take a picture. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why, what was going on until Alex said, oh, hey, you know, it's locked. You need to open it. And
don't
sure
worry,
enough,
it got me the first time I used it also.
Other than that, though, it is a fantastic camera. I do recommend using it. I'm not a huge fan of Nikon, but this camera is really fantastic. I really do like it, and I thank you for letting me borrow it.
You're welcome.
I really like it.
Yeah, I kind of picked it up while we were off having our refreshments after wandering around Milton with it, and I actually really liked it. Inside the restaurant, I just pointed it at a couple random items and just clicked the shutter. But one of them, I shot the ceiling in there. Honestly, it's because if you did look at the ceiling, it's got some really nice faux exposed beams and stuff. And
I've never been that drunk at Ivy Arms to be able to look at the ceiling.
I kind of looked behind. They had the Kilkenny. The little signs and stuff. I didn't take a picture of just the ceiling. I took a picture of above the bar, of the ceiling fan, the light, and the ceiling with the faux beams and stuff. I took a picture of that. And when I used it, the meter on it seemed really, really simple
to
use.
The meter is,
It's dead simple to use. Yep.
And it's pretty easy to load the film in it as well. Some of those cameras you get and it's finicky to load, this one's extremely easy.
Oh, absolutely.
No, it is a match needle. It's not automatic. Is that correct?
No, it uses an LED system.
But in terms of like match, I'm using match needle.
It's a similar idea,
The generic, term.
You adjust it until you get the circle. Mm-hmm.
Which I think makes it, like if you're new to film photography.
It makes it easier.
Yeah, well, I would suggest, you know, if you want to learn photography, you don't want to jump into an automatic camera right away.
No.
So this will be a camera like this, I think, would be really, really good for learning the craft.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that there's plenty of different of the FM series. There's the original FM, the FM2, the FM2N, the FM3N, and the plastic fantastic FM10, which I actually see some photography students at Sheridan walking around campus using, and it's, using film.
That's the one that Cassina still makes, right?
Yes.
The FM10.
Yeah, the FM10 and the Nikon F6 are the two film cameras that are still generally manufactured in decent quality.
Yeah,
quantity.
The one that that Donna does have, she's got the Nikon FM, the all black edition.
And one thing that those who have seen the Nikon FM or FE line of cameras is you'll probably recognize it because the Nikon DF is based on this style of camera, right? Right, that new style of camera, these new cameras that come out with those retro looks.
Like the Pentax that if you use it over a long period of time, it starts brassing.
I don't like that.
I could never figure out the DF because, you know, it's a digital camera that looks and feels like a 35 millimeter. For the price of a DF, you could buy a Nikon FM2N.
You could buy 20 Nikon FM2s.
Well, I say you could buy one and shoot an awful lot of film.
Yes. Yep. Well, heck, you can buy an FM2 with the legendary 105. Yeah,
you
on could
buy
it.
Every single lens you
with some
wanted.
Film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's silliness. Like, I'm not gonna go on a tangent about digital, but it's kind of cool that they're making their cameras to look like some retro ones, and it's neat for a shtick. But let's face it. That if you're going to shoot something that looks and feels and operates like a 35 millimeter SLR,
shoot film.
Exactly.
Shoot and the 35 millimeter.
It's cheaper to get the full format, full frame.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
In 35 in film than it is in digital.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
35 by 24, you know, miniature format, which pisses the full framers off.
Yes. Because what does a DF run? How many thousands?
Probably close to about 2,500, 3,000.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that hurts. Like that's literally that is Leica 35 millimeter rangefinder territory.
Yep.
It's insane. And Leicas, you can literally pick up a Leica for, let's say you buy it for $1,000, you can turn around and probably sell it easily 3 years down the line for $1,000+.
Yep.
They appreciate in value. That digital that you spent $2,500 on
depreciates.
Good luck. Yeah. It's like buying a luxury car.
It's like buying a car in general. So, over to Mike with a very unique SLR. I really do like the look of it.
So yeah, the Zeiss Icon Contaflex Super B. That's the one I've got. There are multiple different types of Zeiss Icon Contaflex. There's the original Contaflex SLR-1 with the non-interchangeable lens, which I do have one, and it is stuck. It doesn't work, period. It's not even worth me fixing. But then again, I mean, that's what I get for buying a camera for $10, right? That's extremely, quote-unquote, advanced. Then there's the SLR-2, which was slightly more advanced. And I think that one had a interchangeable element, but don't quote me on it. I can't remember for sure. It was never one that really crossed my radar for one to get. Then there's the Zeiss Icon S, and that was when it all started to change for Zeiss Icon on their Contaflex line. They suddenly had, yes, 100% I can say this, an interchangeable front element for it. Then we go to the Contaflex Super. Now, there are two different models of the Super. There's the brand spanking new one, which I mean by brand spanking new is the later edition that I'm not going to cover here, but you can get it all from Wiki. Then after the Super, you had the Super B and the Super BC. Now, I have the Super B, which the difference between the B and the BC is the Super BC had a battery, and which I think stood because it had the cadmium sulfide meter on it, whereas the Super B has a selenium cell. Now, mine, the selenium cell is shot. The camera itself, though, for all intents and purposes, sort of works. There are some minor flaws with it, but that's because of the advanced design of it. I mean, quite literally, this camera was ahead of its time. They even tried to make the Super, I believe it was the Contaflex Super or Super S, the last one in the line. They tried to make one. They had a prototype of it, of the camera that would be a leaf shutter with auto return mirror. Like, it was so far advanced that they actually could not get it off the floor. They tried to market it, they tried to do everything possible to get it out, but they just couldn't do it, and they ended up going kapoof, gone.
But let's talk about the Super B.
So
specifically, you mentioned something earlier about interchangeable elements. So does this mean that this has interchangeable lenses?
Now, when you hear interchangeable lenses such as a standard SLR like the FM2 or the Nikon F or Canons or Penta, the list goes on, you could literally push a button, lens comes off, new lens goes on, and Bob's your uncle or whoever your uncle might be. Well, on this one, it's similar to if anybody knows the Kodak Retina line of cameras.
Okay.
Whereas the front elements, actually, you take those off and you put on new front elements. And that changes your focal length. Now, the one I have on here today is the Zeiss Pro Tesser 85 millimeter F4. Sorry, I'm just going with pure markings on the lens. I should know better. But yes, it's the 85mm f4 lens. It's just the front elements that change, which is also why it is so long when you look at it on the camera. If you had changed it to putting a proper 85mm, it would be significantly shorter. Okay. The 35mm is very similar in length to the 85mm just because it has to change the way the elements refract the light going to the film plane. The one that makes it super compact is the standard that comes on it, which is a 50mm 2.8, which is unbelievably tack sharp. And, like, honestly, this camera is really, really fun to use. It's hefty because it is really friggin' solid. I mean, it's like it's been milled out of a single block of
steel.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but
silver.
Here it would be...
block of silver.
It's obviously made out of aluminum, and it's chrome-coated and all that fun stuff. I mean, it's a beautiful camera. It is not really a system camera. It was hopefully designed. They tried to put it out for the prosumer market. Didn't quite make it. It kind of more made it towards the advanced amateur line, but
I can see that.
But honestly, it is a really good camera. To take the film out, you open up the whole back. It doesn't flip open. It unclips and the back comes off. A lot of people like that. A lot of people don't like that.
Yeah, that's the one problem I have with the Nikon F is the whole remove the whole back thing.
Well, here's the thing. This is the one thing that I can prove that the remove the back system is probably brilliant, at least for this. Interchangeable backs.
Well, again, that was what the Nikon F was going for. So, well, you had that massive film magazine you could.
Oh, no. I mean, let's say this camera right now is loaded with black and white at speed of 100. Okay, dark slide in, back comes off, new back in, pull the dark slide. We got color film in there at 800 speed. Again, dark slide in, back goes off, new back on, pull the dark slide.
So,
guess what we got? We now have a super slow black and white film or color film
or
whatever.
So it's a magazine camera like a Bronica or a Hasselblad.
Absolutely.
Nice.
That was one really, really cool thing about this camera is the fact that it had the interchangeable backs. And you can still find them online. Excellent. Now, I'm going to give some really bad news on this line of camera. I mean, honestly, I love it. Don't get me wrong. This is probably one of my favorite cameras I've ever bought. But it's a little advanced. And the problem when I'm saying this is not, it's too advanced to use. No, it's actually the design. The engineering that went into this camera was a little insane. I mean, it is a Leaf Shutter SLR. So you're looking through it. If you look at a medium format camera, it makes more sense. Parts are bigger.
Right.
So having a Leaf Shutter with a mirror and all that fun stuff inside a medium format, it's bigger parts. It's easier to work with. This, everything is super compact. So we've got fine little springs inside that require lubricant to constantly work. And over time, that oil breaks down. I mean, just think about in your car. As the oil breaks down, it's no longer protecting the engine. It's kind of like it's almost turning into water. So it ends up leaking out and ends up on the aperture control and aperture blades. Now, everybody looks at this and be like, oh, well, it's on the aperture blades. Just take it apart and clean it. No, you can't do that with this camera.
No.
It's a lot more advanced than that. This is not a camera that anybody can just take apart and fix. No, it's so stupidly advanced that there's even repair shops that if you mention the fact that you're sending them a Contaflex, they will tell you straight out, no, we don't touch it. And that's simply because of the way it's designed.
Right.
So this one here is known, has a problem that is known as a slow stop down. And what happens is when you take the picture with this camera, first it starts with the light trap is closed. The mirror is in the down position. Your shutter is in its wide open position, as is the aperture. Now, as soon as you go to take that picture, shutter closes, aperture stops down, mirror flips up, light trap opens, and then the shutter actuates at the speed that you've set and closes again. Now, all that happens in a blink, like shorter than a blink of an eye.
Blink of an eye.
So what I have actually done, I've opened up the back, I've looked through, and I've shot the shutter at bulb. And I can actually see the aperture still closing after the lens is already opened. Okay. So that is one of the issues with the Contaflex. It is a very common issue. So if you are looking at one on, say, eBay or something like that, be prepared for some bad news. And I'm telling you right now, you want that sort of idea fixed. This is not a CLA. This is known as an overhaul. And there is only maybe two or three people in the world that can fix this camera.
Okay.
One of them has a minimum 3 to 4 year waiting list, and he is probably the number one repair guy for all Zeiss cameras. And he's located in the US or at ZeissCameras.com. He's damn good at what he does, but also that makes him one of the most highly sought after repairmen, which kind of gives a really, really long waiting list, and be prepared to pay for it.
Always. Just like your medalist. Okay. And switching away from the SLRs, one of these things is not like the other, but it is still a beautiful camera. We have John's Canon P.
Yeah, this is the Canon P. It stands for Populaire, and it dates from 1958 to 1961. And it was supposed to be sort of a more almost entry-level, less expensive model. It precedes the Canon 7 series, which is fairly well known. It's not as fancy as the Canon 7 series. For example, it doesn't have a meter. It has frame lines for, let me refresh my memory, 35, 50, and I think it's 90 millimeter. The frame lines, though, are fixed. You can't switch them in and out. So, and the 35 millimeter, like with, if you're wearing glasses, like three out of four of us do, it can be tough to see the edges. But you know, I don't want to start off with negatives and give you the wrong idea, because it is a very solid, very well built camera. It uses the Leica screw mount lenses, so you can either use the Canon lenses. If you go back to you know, the 50s, early 60s, you'll often see the Canon Serenar is the designation. Some very, very fine lenses. What I have mounted on it right now is I have a bunch of the newer Voigtlander Leica thread mount. This is a 35 millimeter, and I've also got like the 15 millimeter super wide that we mentioned in the favorite lenses show.
That's right.
One thing also I like about this camera is even something as simple as the rewind knob. That's nicely designed the way
it
they
is.
Have it.
It looks it, like
it goes,
a piece of art.
It goes flush. A little thing. You can tell, see a little dot? Okay, sorry, you can't see this online. Or this little dot, when you take a shot and turn, it helps confirm that film is actually advancing.
Nice.
A little thing like that.
The Canonettes had something similar, mm-hmm. but I think it was more like...
what
like
I like about it is it doesn't look boxy. Yeah. It's really thin.
There are people who say he looks... And actually, like I've had a Canon 7. It died. And I've had this. I actually prefer this to the Canon 7. It feels nicer.
That's what I've heard in the
fingers.
Big fans of the Canon P's over the Canon 7s.
And then the last thing I'll mention is one thing I really like, because I'm not super mechanically inclined. So there's some kind of, like, I would never even think to open up a Contaflex or the my contacts 3A that I have. But for this, like, it's a sad fact, you know, most rangefinder cameras, you know, the, especially older ones, that the rangefinder will go out of alignment over time. And there are some cameras, like, you ever read up on how to do the rangefinder alignment on a Retina? You don't want to try it yourself. It's major disassembly. For this, all I have to do is take this one little screw off here. That there's a screw beside the viewfinder. Take the screw off, and then there's a little hole, and then I stick like a Phillips or a slot screw, like a 00, 000, smallest jeweler size you can get, and that is the adjustment.
Oh, nice.
So I was able, because when I got this body, when I got it via the eBay from Japan, everything was in great shape, but the range finder was just so completely off. But all I had to do was, 10 minutes later, the bit of work with the jeweler screwdriver, and it was bang on. So where some cameras, like I've got my Voigtlander Bessa R, it needs a range finder adjustment badly. But that's not something I'm sure that I want to try, having read the conflicting sets of instructions online. Another thing about the Canon, the shutter is a sort of like a steel, like plastic coated steel. So they all tend to look crinkly. But don't be put off. Even if the shutter curtains look a bit crinkled, the odds are it'll still work.
Nice.
The last thing, the viewfinders have been known to get a bit flary or fadey over time. So ideally, if you can, when you're going to get one of these, make sure you get return privileges, or ask. It's not one of these ones where if the seller says, "I don't know anything about cameras, but it looks okay to me," make sure you have return privileges, or
could
ideally hold
it
in your hands.
Add like a colored filter over it to help increase the contrast.
It's not so much just like the rangefinder patch. It's actually the whole finder.
Okay.
And even when it's in good shape, it is a bit susceptible to flare. We had this out shooting it today. In certain lighting situations, it can be really hard because there's so much light coming in.
Now, is that because it's coming in from? Because I'm looking at it just from here. When you're looking through the rangefinder or the viewfinder, now is that light coming in through the side, or is that basically just light coming in through the front of the viewfinder?
I think it's a combination.
Okay.
And the fact that I wear glasses,
there's no
kind of eye cup or anything like that.
Yeah.
Right.
The only thing that's what I'm noticing is looking through the viewfinder on that from this side, from the opposite side, it looks like there's just a sheet of protective glass in front, and then it's got the curvature of the actual lens that you'd be looking through. That could be one of the issues, right? Since the light's hitting that front glass first, it's causing it to disperse. But that's just speculation on my part.
I mean, again, like not a fatal flaw if you can check the camera. These also are not horribly expensive compared to, let's say, like a Canon 7S, for example. I think from terms of pure usability, it's a lot easier to use than, let's say, the Leica Barnack screw mount cameras, because you've got the combined viewfinder. You're not loading the films with the bottom.
Yeah.
So if you have a bunch of Leica screw mount lenses, this is definitely one of the cameras to consider.
A viable option. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like the Leica screw mount lenses. I mean, they're let's face it, you got the Russian models, you've got Canon, you've got Nikon. I believe Minolta has some screw mount. No?
No, not Minolta. Minolta did some M mount lenses, bayonet mount
lenses.
Oh,
yeah, it's the bayonet that they have. That's right.
For the CLE.
Yeah, but when it comes to screw mount, there's tons of them, and they're heck. And they're still being manufactured today. I mean, that's some serious longevity.
Yeah, it's definitely a good mount. Okay, so whether you love it or hate it, iPhoneography is here to stay, and there are plenty of interesting applications to get that analog, old school Lomography look out there, like Hipstamatic, Instagram, Vintiq is another one. There are filters that are built into the standard editing one. But where did this all come from? Anything that's done in digital photography came from film photography in the first part. And there are a lot of people out there that like the look that comes out to it and then come into these film cameras and go, I want to do the same thing I can do on Instagram. So what are some of the things that you can do? Like, let's first talk cameras.
Well, again, the if it's all about sort of LOMO, low fidelity, you know, go to your grandparents' or great-grandparents' attic, and if they've got something like
Brownie
Hawkeye Flash or Duaflex,
yeah,
some of the older Argus, you know, there any number of old brand cameras, you know, they basically have single shutter speed, single element meniscus lens,
uncoated lenses,
yes. Yeah. And you're halfway there to getting that that look.
Absolutely. Plus, there's a bunch of cameras that are still readily available. Unfortunately, the Holga factory has shut down, but the cameras are still around, or Holga-like clones. Yep. You've got the Diana as well. The FPP Debonair, which is hands down one of the only toy cameras that I actually like to shoot and love the results I get out of it. So again, yeah,
and there are a gazillion brownies out there still.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah,
and if you pay more than $15, you're overpaying.
Yeah, and box cameras too. I mean, you can get. There's only one problem that I find with box. Sometimes they're a little bit too sharp. Like it's bizarre. I don't quite understand it. I've shot with some box cameras, and literally, I'm sitting there going, "This isn't from a box. There's no way this is from a box."
Yeah.
So I mean, if you're looking for that look, box cameras can be a way in. But at the same time, they may surprise you.
Yeah. Plus, there are plenty of lenses that you can put onto your SLRs.
Oh, like, heck, you can get a Holga lens.
You
for
can get
it.
A Holga lens. I have a Lens Baby.
Yep, I got some of that stuff.
Which is really nice for stuff like that. And then, of course, you need something to put in to it. And, well, I mean, you get expired film, right? Like hard expired film, slide film. A lot of slide films expire really hard and give that weird funky color shift. And then you can just cross-process it, which means instead of putting it through E6 chemistry, you put it through C41. Now, not a lot of labs will do that. I know that the darkroom.com will do cross-processing. Also, Old School Photo Lab in New Hampshire will do cross-processing as well. Or again, you buy the chemistry and do it yourself at home.
Yeah,
not hard.
No, just, C41's really
just
simple.
Just make sure that you... like do your E6 first, right? And then once you've run through the 10 or so rolls, then go ahead and cross process, because then you're working with expired chemistry, which will shift it even more, because that's what you're going for. You're going for that really crazy look.
I think in addition to you know, things like expired films, like films that were sort of, you know, meant to be high fidelity at one part but then just sort of got old.
Yeah.
There's certainly no shortage today of special purpose films
that
are meant to like the Lomo line
Lomo
of films.
Purple.
Or there's
Lomo
there's,
purple, Lomo yeah. Turquoise.
I haven't really seen anything of the turquoise. I'm gonna have to take a look and get some
They also samples. Have the X Pro line of films, which are slide film that actually respond really well to cross-processing. They look really, really good. You can go either way. And it's again, it's egg for film stock. Just branded Lomography, right?
I've the Rolly X Pro films, actually. That is a really nice bird. Like
that's egg for stock. Same stuff that they sell
the
Lomography.
The Crossbird, I've yet to cross-process that. I've shot it as E6 and developed it, yeah. I was shocked, because I've heard mixed reviews on, say, the CR200 and the CN200. I heard really mixed reviews on that. Some like the neutral tones to it, other ones can't stand it. But the Crossbird, I was actually really pleasantly surprised with. I mean, it's a really fine grain structure and everything. So.
And a great source for expired film is that you just go on eBay and people are selling this film in lots. Like you can get 100 rolls of expired film that actually advertise great for Lomography.
Yeah,
or
you
if you're in the Toronto area, the Camerorama show, a gentleman, Abraham Vinegar, just sells boxes and boxes of random film that he's found, like $1-$2 a roll.
Yeah, I remember.
You might be able to find some really good stuff down at the bottom, right? I found some Tech Pan.
Yeah, I got some not Tech Pan. I got some.
But
was it Panatomic X I found?
Panatomic X, I found
some
Panatomic
Plus X.
Some Plus X, yeah, exactly.
And some old Agfa stocks, like APX 100.
Now, the thing with using expired film, though, you have to sort of go into this with the right mindset. Because one of the words you mentioned was random. That's one of the things you're going for here, is you have to be prepared for the element of surprise, the occasional total failure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've had that.
So
it's something that I experimented with fairly early on in my film photography journey, but it's something that thankfully I've since outgrown. I mean, I'll go out with my Lomography Horizon Compact or my FPP Debonair, but I'll always load fresh film into it.
Your Lomography Horizon Compact,
it's a swing lens panorama.
I've been really wanting to try that one of these days. I'm going to have to borrow that.
Absolutely.
Try it out. I like panoramic shots.
Yeah.
There's really something to them.
Yep.
And that's what, 35 mil?
Yep.
Cool. Okay. Definitely going to have to check that one out.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's just something that, I mean, you have to be in the right mindset for it. I mean, some days I get into that, oh, man, I'd love to go shoot a toy camera, right? Because I look outside and go, oh, yeah, that's a really great look. Last time I shot it was actually on World Toy Camera Day, which takes place in October. There are conflicting about what the date is. Some say it was a Saturday, some say it was a Sunday. So I just shot the camera on both days.
There you go.
In downtown Pittsburgh and in an abandoned rayon factory in Tennessee. And again, it was the right day, the right film, the right location. And I got magic. Well, that wraps it up for this show. Just a reminder, we have our gas meet going on the 7th of May in Hamilton, Ontario. RSVP by joining our Facebook group. We should have some ideas of what buildings are available through Doors Open Hamilton soon. Runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the morning. Come and go as you please. RSVP on Facebook or email us, classiccamerarevival@gmail.com. That's it for me. I'm Alex Lux, and I prefer shooting film over shooting hoops.
This is John Meadows. I may be past date, but I still work if exposed.
I'm Mike Bataxi, and I don't just stick to the black ones. I like the chrome ones, too. I'm sorry, Donna. I
And Donna Bataxi is speechless. So
I'm Donna Bataxi, and keep that film rolling.